The most obvious factor that appears, you know, perhaps on the topics that might be convenient and nothing else, is that four chapters, four sections, education, and that would be Arafat and Alenka, law and administration, that would be Bessa and Georgi, identities, that is Ivan and Yasmina.
And maybe Theo.
And maybe Theo. And then center, periphery, you know, catching up, progress, and so on. That is provincialism, that is Steffi, Maya, and Volker.
Mm-hmm. And there is some thought, perhaps, to keep the volume stitched together around theoretical concerns, that there would be a commentary after each section by a faculty member. So perhaps Dan would take the education one. And the idea would be to compare each of them and also link them to the other sections. Law and administration would be me. Identities might be Irena, and center periphery and catching up, progress, blah blah blah, might be Misha.
But we'll pair up. I just have a technical suggestion. Let us not employ these categories. Identity, education, and stuff like that. Maybe cashier, right? Not cashier, but more descriptive. We don't want to fall back to this kind of category.
We don't also use sorry. We use sorry.
Administration and law, we could just translate it into what the meaning is in commonsensical terms. What do people understand under education and law?
Administration and law.
Yeah, administration.
Let us not tag things in a conventional way again. We started off this way. Admittedly, at our preparatory meeting, we did this little categorizing boxes.
Yep.
What is law? What is trauma? What is this? What is the other? Let's move away from that one. Okay?
Maybe it needs more descriptive titles so we can actually come up with them when we have that.
Okay, is there any discussion about this? Any questions from the other group? I think it's time to explain the title and how we intend this name here.
Well, I was going to take a leaf out of our leader's book and delegate to Yasmina. Do you want to explain the title and its various meanings?
The post-compulsion.
The post-compulsion.
Now or in writing?
Now.
You have to imagine.
Yes, but can you think back to the
from bench to the table, something like that? This needs to be a clear recording for the children.
Okay. So the title of the book is The Pod in Kermit. Pod of Compulsion. And it's chosen because of this twofold meaning that a red compulsion has. One is force and the other the urge. So basically, there is this force, you know, a set of forces, like a series of forces and, you know, an insidious pressure to coerce our thinking and acting in these positive terms. And it does present both for, I would say, both for thought and practice, a kind of obligation and duress. And there are all these techniques of persuasion that are involved in it, that we think in these four terms. But these are all the meanings of the force. Force, pressure, coercion, obligation, duress, persuasion. When it comes to the second type of compulsion, semantic side of compulsion, means urge. So we do feel this urge to actually kind of characterize a certain phenomenon or a certain period in positive terms. And it also reflects an impulse, why this impulse, you know, how we should reflect on it, how we should think of it, why this desire and craving and need to actually, actually think about the realm, and especially about this region in such terms.
I think what's nice about the relation of the coercion and the urge is that it captures the external pressure
and the
internal
pressure.
Well, after 3 years of many seminar activities, discussions, I think just as important what happened, after hours and discussions amongst ourselves, that really when we look at the very, diverse kinds of situations we find ourselves in, we do find some commonalities in terms of the challenges we have in teaching. And I think the obvious one is higher order thinking, that we've all said that most of our students, and we're talking now primarily about undergraduate students, really have a difficult time with higher order thinking. They want to take things you talk about at a personal, often at a very common sense level, without really realizing that what we're talking about are a new set of tools that we're going to introduce to them, really conceptual tools. And so we identified the primary kind of challenges we have in our teaching are really challenges of conceptualization and contextualization. That is, that how do you make students begin to understand that this activity of conceptualizing reality, of dealing with the complexities that we have that surround us, are indeed only understood if put, in a context. Of course, the really, I guess, the ultimately sort of the response that we worry about is that often you find students reacting to this as if what you're really suggesting is a complete kind of relativism. That, well, okay, then it's all right to say anything or believe anything, and no one has a right to challenge me. And we decided, and I mean amongst ourselves, I think what we have tried to suggest is that this need not be the case. That, in fact, this is sort of symptomatic of this legacy of this older kind of pedagogy that many of us encountered in our education, and that is, that sort of an either-or kind of view of nature, culture, self, other, objective, subjective, that it's always either-or, true or false. And what we've really come up with is the idea that what we're really all talking about is ways of getting across that higher order thinking, theorization, abstractions, concepts are useful as tools of ways of understanding the complexity that surrounds us, but that these tools, again, are not something that are just automatically given, that the tools indeed have values implicit in them. And this led us to a discussion really about given this sort of very radical kinds of proposal, and we talked about an interesting phenomenon that's worth mentioning here, that in terms of maybe our generation, by our generation I mean here very specifically people, most of us around the table among the resource faculty, people who are products of sort of 60s, 70s, 80s academic climate, that and education systems, is that what we see is really emerging over the last, you know, half century, the last half of the 20th century, is sort of this crisis of modernity, and part of what modernity was, whether it be the socialist version of colonialism or some other kinds of colonialism that morphed into often a kind of socialist reality, is that we began to realize that education in both the project of modernity, whether it be laissez-faire kind of neoclassical liberalism or whether it be socialist models, both were about very clear notions of these kinds of where history was moving and what history could teach us. And we recognized that the role of teachers in these projects was always to have the answers. And that we many of us grew up in a situation where teachers had the answers and students were empty vessels. They were to be the receptors of the truth, of the laws of historical materialism or the inevitable, constrained to supply and demand in a market economy. And these were just as if they were natural laws. And what we realize that part of what we're facing is the fact that we are in the middle of those of us that have participated in this. What we share is that we're telling students that in many cases we don't have the answers. But we have tools, conceptual tools, theories, ways that you may approach the complexity of this world that surrounds us that could be useful given the kind of life that you want to lead. And it led us to thinking about this in terms of methodologies, that ultimately when it comes to methodologies, we're really looking at a kind of a multi-methodological kind of premise, a methodological pluralism. There's no one way to do this project of getting students to recognize that maybe knowledge is simply the possessive knowledge is self-conscious awareness. That what you're dealing with is essentially are tools that may have some are more useful than others in a given context. And the ability to ascertain which of these we use, it led us to kind of a pluralistic methodology position, and that is that we use the media. Many people talk about how they've used the media in terms of trying to convey the issues, the problems of neat, simple definitions that people want to impose on reality. We talked about case studies. We talked about well-chosen ethnographic illustrations. We talked about a number of things that, for lack of a better term, we called the sort of exercises in everyday life experience. That one of the challenges we have, and it seems to really resonate, we've reported several of us with our students, that what resonates most with the students is when you demonstrate in those aha moments that a student has that abstraction you talked about, you know, whether it be reification or alienation or deconstruction or whatever, or engendered identities, when you give them that aha moment and you say, but you know this, you live this. This is where you are, who you are, in your family, in this society. And so this is really sort of the challenge that we have, that this pluralistic methodology has a point, and the point is whether you're using these everyday life kind of experiential exercises, ethnographic illustrations, role-playing, or active-based learning, that the best we could say probably is that in the kind of pedagogy that we want to advance, wherein we don't know the answers for now, is that what we're trying to suggest, what we're trying to do in our classes, is demonstrate to them a confidence in using these tools. And our hope is, success is in the classroom, at the end of the semester, if we can devise ways where through demonstration or examination, students can show us that they know how to use these tools. And that's ultimately what we're asking, you know, of students. And we got to thinking about it in a general term. What are we talking about? Well, we're really talking about sort of modes of competent inquiry. How does one proceed with asking important questions and arriving at maybe some of us would admit truths with a small t, certainly not any truth with a capital T, but things that might have real efficacy in our everyday lives, where we live, in our families, in our workplace, in the institutions we move in and out of. So, you know, in terms of really thinking about what this project has produced in all of us, I guess it is a recognition that if anyone wants to hold out hope for democracy, still has a faith in an idea of democracy, that certainly what we will have to give up is the notion that we can find a formula for that. And that someone else can come in and give you democracy, but rather democracy will be something that would be the result of engaged human beings in a guided inquiry, in even a rational inquiry, but one that challenges the notions that somehow the tools that we use, these conceptualizations, are somehow divorced from their everyday lives. This is really the challenge we have, is making students recognize, young people recognize, that these have value, and then demonstrating the value that they have. So that's the report we have tonight.
Okay. I think it was very good. That's adjudicated now. We're just down the street. A few time though, descendants. Okay, we will put the soundtrack online as soon as possible. We will put the written record of the book session. If you as well commit to writing down the major points, or
what would we have to do, a transcription?
A transcription of this.
Yeah.
People
will have access to audio recording.
Yeah, that would be indeed very helpful. Yeah. So now we have to clear the table for people to prepare dinner. So we'll resume tomorrow morning and we'll make use of
the agenda. Tomorrow will be modernity. Are we going to tackle modernity?
Tomorrow we have to come to a written resume of modernity. And then we have to also come to a conclusive debate on the other issues that we had as discussing groups. You may not have participated in them, but by now I think our knowledge is shared enough and our purpose is well understood, so we can wrap this up as well. But we will, of course, ask the absent colleagues to chime in.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, very good work. Thank you all. Dinner time.